AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Hey, well, here we go. It's another Books of the Year podcast. This is our Q&A with Chris Brookmeyer. And he's here, well, he's been here because he wants to tell it's all about the crack mirror. And you can hear all about that in our previous episode with Chris explaining the characters and the ideas behind that. This is the Q&A. And this is the question which, when Mark Billingham answered it, got Chris here because he was raving about it so much. So depending on what you're going to recommend, maybe we need to go for this person as a guest. We don't know what you're going to say, but we'll find out. So what is the last book, Chris Brookmeyer, that you really, really enjoyed reading?
It was The Botanist by M.W. Craven, Mike Craven. I'd been, after delivering a novel, I was, it's sometimes quite hard to settle to something else. And I'd read a couple of things and that hadn't really engaged me, and then I picked this up. I'd known him for on and off at festivals for years, and I'd never picked up one of his books. And it was just, you know, people talk about a roller coaster. This was more like the chair of planes, you know, this constant sense of forward momentum, soaring forward momentum. It was just the most kind of breakneck, really exciting and sort of puzzling crime fiction, someone who's managing to poison very well-protected targets remotely. And meanwhile, there's at the same time, there's this brilliant locked room mystery of someone who's been found dead in a house with, and there's been a snowfall and there's no footprints. So there's one set of footprints, and that's the person who's in custody for it. And just in quite ingenious levels of storytelling and research and humour, and this constant, as I say, this constant sense of a forward momentum. I just hadn't had that sense of just completely soaring excitement reading something for quite some time, and so I will be reading far more of M.W. Craven.
And that's called The Botanist.
Yeah.
I have to say, we talked about titles in our last conversation with you. I would be really interested to know whether Mike Craven had a conversation with his, or the editor said, this is a breakneck adventure. It's a roller coaster. And you want to call it The Botanist?
The Botanist,
yeah. Yeah, that would be, I'd be like a fly in the wall for that one, given that, well, I think his first one was called The Puppet Show, and his latest one's called The Mercy Chair, and they both sound slightly more sinister.
Intriguing, but The Botanist, just, who wants to read The Botanist? No, thanks. But I do now.
Yeah. Okay. So, Chris, you started your career as a journalist. Does that mean that you work well to deadlines?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I always totally do. I mean, I put myself under pressure. Once I've started to create a deadline in my head, even if it's a false deadline, I think I'll always try and hit it. I think I always fear I'm going to run out of time. I think because when you're a writer, it's not... There's no absolute way of knowing how long a book's going to be. You might know roughly, but you never know how quickly you're going to be able to write it. There's always the fear that you'll run into trouble. So I'm always trying to be as efficient as I can. And so I don't think I've ever missed a deadline.
I wonder whether it gives... That's my background as well, is in journalism. And I wonder whether there is something about being a journalist and knowing that it is non-negotiable. You hit this deadline because the paper needs to come out, and you can write as much flowery prose as you like. If it's not getting in the paper, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think working in newspapers and magazines, you know how many other people are relying on you to hit your deadline and how many people you're going to inconvenience if you don't. So I think that drives it home.
Also, I think radio people, which is what I am, are very aware of time and are on time and will start on time, finish on time. You know what I mean? Because that's...
Being live. Yeah,
you can't, you know, sorry, I'm a little bit late. No, you start at four. Yeah, that's what you do. You know, you can't turn up at 10 past four. That's, you know, it doesn't work like that. You also worked in film and television, and The Cut, one of your previous novels being adapted for the screen. Screen adaptation is an intriguing and extraordinary area, and some people have an incredible gift, but you know when you've seen a fantastic screen adaptation. Do you have a favourite?
Among crime fiction of late, I must say that the adaptation of Mick Herron's Slow Horses, that series is just as good as I've ever seen. I mean, if your work was going to be adapted, I think you'd want it to be adapted that way. Because I was a huge admirer of the books. I thought the books were just fantastic. So to see all the characters come to life, the casting is absolutely perfect. The tone is perfect, because that would be a difficult thing to get the tone right between the tension and the high stakes, but the constant humour. So that, to me, is going to be the kind of high watermark of adaptation.
Yeah, I interviewed Gary Oldman, and he was in the middle of filming the third series. So he arrived in character pretty much. Wow, I mean, he looked a state, you know, for such a successful actor, you know. You're absolutely right. It's a fantastic adaptation.
Is there a plot or a character that you wish you'd come up with, Chris?
Yeah, do you know, there was a novel published a few years ago called The Last Days of Jack Sparks.
Yes.
By Jason Arnott.
Yeah.
And I would, and it's hard to say because it's very spoiler sensitive, but it's about a kind of journalist, that's a rock journalist type who's quite notorious, and he's gone missing, and then his account of his last days is found, and he's investigating people who are into the paranormal and seances and things like that in Los Angeles. It takes him around the world, but it's one of those books that just, there's this creeping sense of dread, and then when actually when the truth of it becomes clear, you're dropping the book simply because you're trembling so much. It's a fantastic horror story, and I've often thought that structure, which I can't talk about, is one I would absolutely love to have come up with, and or even just come up with some kind of version of that.
And is that because no one else had thought of it before?
There's maybe been iterations of something like this, because it does involve the supernatural and therefore allows certain narrative devices that you wouldn't be able to put in a sort of gritty bit of crime fiction. But yeah, Jason Arnott, who obviously he started off as a rock journalist. In fact, he plays himself in the movie Lords of Chaos.
Oh, really?
Yeah, about the sort of Norwegian black metal scene of the late 80s, early 90s.
We try to get a surprise question for all of our authors. So we got a voice note here from best-selling crime author Janice Hallett. Here we go.
Hi, Simon. Hi, Matt. And hello, Chris. As you know, I'm a big fan of your work, and I loved The Cracked Mirror. What I'd love to know is, if you were going to commit a crime, what crime would that be? And how would you get away with it?
Very good.
That's great.
Very,
I like that.
Very, very good.
I like that a lot.
It would have to be something that didn't hurt anybody. So it would have to be some kind of heist. I'm always drawn to some kind of heist. And it would take an awful lot of planning, even more than a novel. That's how I would try and do it. How I would get away with it, I probably wouldn't. I'm really, really bad at trying to deceive people. I've got zero poker face. I'm burdened by guilt if I've ever done anything wrong. So as soon as the police came round, I'd be like, it was me, and here's why.
Is it going to be, it would need whiteboard-tastic, all of that for another trip to Ventura, mate.
There would be sort of misdirection, prestidigitation, illusion involved. You know, it would... just anything to avoid actually having to point a gun at someone and ask them to give me money.
Do you have a mentor? Have you had a mentor?
I kind of had a mentor, in as much as I've learned an awful lot from working with my wife, even before we were working together professionally. I met her when we were both students, and I was off to study English literature and theatre at Glasgow Uni, and she was doing medicine. And her work ethic just kind of like absolutely stuck with me, that, and it changed my perception at a time when people would be tempted by the freedoms and the excesses that you can enjoy when you're a student. It helped me to realise, no, this is a chance I'm getting to educate myself. So I spent an awful lot more time in the library than many of my peers. And all down the years, I've learnt a lot from Marissa's work ethic. But actually working with her in writing has been transformative, because I think we learnt a lot from each other, but I have changed the way I work. I've become far more disciplined about plot and structure. And so she has had, she didn't mean to mentor me. I think she thought I was the one mentoring her, but it's actually happened the other way around.
Sweeping generalisation, I know, but medical students or students of certainly biology, chemistry, that kind of thing, they work unbelievably hard. And it's sort of, certainly I did arts subjects, and bluntly, you could bluff your way through quite a lot of that. Can't do that with sciences.
No, I think that's why I realised that in the arts, it's far less structured. You know, the degree you get is very much the degree you've created for yourself, or in terms of what you chose to read and how closely you chose to read it. And I think I realised that even if you can bluff your way to a decent grade, you've kind of cheated yourself in terms of what you've missed out on.
Your friend and fellow crime writer Vasim Khan announced recently he's writing a new series starring Q from James Bond, which is a fascinating idea. Is there an author or series or character that you've ever come across and thought, ooh, I could do that?
Do you know, a few years ago, I was asked to sign an NDA by a publisher, and because they said they had this IP, and it turned out to be something completely nonsensical and didn't go anywhere. But I because they got me to sign the NDA, I'd thought they'd had this idea, and it was me that had the idea, really, which was Ian Banks' culture novels. And I knew Ian. He was a huge influence on me in many respects. And his culture novels were some of the best science fiction ever written, but there won't be any more. But I realised they weren't a series about a character. They were a series. They weren't even sequential in terms of their chronology. And I thought this NDA thing was that they were going to ask me and other writers to write culture novels. And I realised I'd had this idea. And this is the first time I think I've actually said this. I thought this would be a great idea, that you could ask writers to write a culture novel so that the culture series could keep going. Mm-hmm. So that would be the first in my list if I was to write something else. Because you could kind of, you wouldn't have to write characters who already exist, but you'd need to make sure your literary credentials were up to snuff to be at the level of Ian's science fiction.
So it didn't go anywhere, or what?
Oh, no, I never even said to my publisher that that's what I thought they were doing. I just I kept this in my own head for various reasons, because I think, I don't know who would, whether Adele, Ian's widow, I don't know whether her as executive of the estate, whether it would be up to her to say that this could fly. But yeah, that would, to me, it's stayed in my head as an intriguing idea, that you could get the same way that they've done with Miss Marple or Poirot or James Bond. You could get writers to take their own take on the cultural universe.
You mentioned you were at university studying literature. If you had a chance to go back, would you go back and do literature again, or is there another subject that's tickled your fancy?
I'd love to actually study art, you know, and the history of art to some extent. I think I can lose myself wandering around an art gallery, sort of staring in fascination at things I'd like to know a bit more formally about what I'm looking at and the traditions. And so I suppose it's because I'm not gifted in that respect, I think. I wouldn't want to study something that's technical or that isn't arts, I suppose. But I'd love to learn an awful lot more about paintings and other forms of art down the years.
Final question. You're throwing a fantasy dinner party, Chris. You can invite three authors, alive or dead. Who's coming?
Oh, Robertson Davies, who was the magnificent Canadian author. He was a kind of titan of Canadian literature. And he wrote all these trilogies, the Cornish Trilogy, the Salterson Trilogy, the Deptford Trilogy. And the Cornish Trilogy, the first novel was called The Rebel Angels. And from that, I took the name Parlabane. There was a character called John Parlabane, this misanthropic monk. and also I took the name Simon Darcourt, who was a villain that I had in A Big Boy Did It and Ran Away. And he was just the most erudite individual, Robertson Davies, but he wore it light. You know, he wrote these very Rabelaisian stories, lots of scatological humour. Famously, he set an exam question which said, Eugene O'Neill's long day's journey into night is one long snot-ridden whine. Disgust. So I would love to have him because he looked like God. If you ever see a photograph of him. And I remember he was being interviewed and the interviewer was saying, oh, when your first couple of novels came out, you were didn't get great reviews or you were slagged off by a lot of the big literary Canadian critics. And he looked the journalist in the eye and said, yes, and they're all dead now. So I would definitely have him. I would have Douglas Adams.
Yeah.
He is one of the writers I would say most lament in terms of... Yeah. Him not being around to write more novels. There wouldn't be a lot of them, to be honest, because he was not the most prolific or industrious of writers. But he's someone who's been inside my head one way or another since I was about 11 years old. And his humour, his humanity and his perspective on science and nature, all of those things, I think he would have been a fascinating dinner guest. But I'd round it off with someone who's real and who is actually coming to dinner this week, which is Mark Billingham. Because Mark is one of my best friends, one of the best dining companions. He's a great dining companion if you're out because he over-orders like an Olympian. But he's also, if I'm ever doing something completely bizarre, like things like I ended up doing stand-up once at the Comedy Store, ended up on stage at Glastonbury, if I'm doing anything bizarre like that, is usually because Mark Billingham's standing a few feet away. And Mark has always got great stories and great jokes, so he would always be first on the list.
Now, I don't know about Robertson Davies, but Douglas Adams, he will bore you about Procol Harum and prog right. Rock. So Mark will talk music, Douglas will talk music. Did Robertson Davies like music, do you think?
Yeah, he the third of the Cornish trilogy was about staging an opera.
Okay.
But it wouldn't be my natural genre. But
would they get on, that crowd?
Oh, yeah, there's a question. That really would be my problem. I'm not going to say of course they would. I don't know. I think there might be some interesting arguments. But I think they all have the same positive view of humanity. I think that would help.
Fascinating. Chris, thank you very much indeed for your time. Chris Brookmeyer, his new book is The Crack Mirror. You can hear him talk about that on our previous podcast. It's published by Abacus. It's out now. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us, you can email us anytime, booksoftheyear@yahoo.com. Send us a missive via our socials. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another best-selling crime author, Ragnar Jonasson. A little bit of Icelandic crime for you. I'm imagining it's crime. I haven't started it yet.
It's not going to be a rom-com, is it?
It's Ragnar Jonasson. No. I hope you can join us then. Thank you for listening.